Hi, listeners. Welcome to Life of a Teen, a podcast that dives into the thoughts of teenagers on pressing topics as broad as leadership or as deep as mental health. Join Aaron, Quincy, V, Catherine, and Olivia in their exploration of their thoughts, experiences, and solutions. Today's topics may include discussion of intense subject matter, such as suicide, substance misuse, and mental health. This may be upsetting to some listeners. Please be advised and seek resources when needed.
Today, we are here with Brian O'Keefe, who's the Community Outreach Specialist for Operation Engage. Would you just like to introduce yourself real quick?
Sure. Brian O'Keefe with the Drug Enforcement Administration, New England Field Division. I am currently assigned as a Community Outreach Specialist. I was hired about a month and a half ago. It's a brand new position called Operation Engage, where we're looking to just engage with the community at large, both adults, children, youth, workplace. We're looking to get the DEA out there to do prevention and education.
And I know you said you were a cop for 25 years before that?
Correct. Prior to starting this assignment a month and a half ago, I was employed by the Manchester Police Department here in New Hampshire. I was a police captain. I ran the Community Policing Division for the last 2 years of my assignments in the police department. I was a public information officer for 6 years. I opened the Police Athletic League in 2004. I coached boxing for a few years. Pretty wide range of things, but always doing something community related as a policeman.
I like that.
Nice. And what are you guys trying to prevent?
Oh, we're trying to just educate the public and prevent them from misuse and use of illicit drugs and legal drugs for that matter.
So I know you talked about Operation Engage, and that's this sort of newer project to, is it to take over DEA 360?
So DEA 360 was a past initiative that It's not a dead issue, but Operation Engage sort of, it kind of spun off of DEA 360, which was geared just for youth. What we're looking to do with Operation Engage is not just engage with the youth of our communities. We want to look at educating the parents of the youth, or those that are in the workplace. We want to educate everybody, because every city that was selected, there was 11 throughout the country, and the Manchester District Office under DEA New England was selected partly because of the opioid crisis that hit this region so hard over the last several years. Instead of focusing on the opioid crisis, we're looking to educate the public about what's here and what's getting worse in the methamphetamine crisis.
Would you be able to elaborate on that for us a little bit?
Sure. So, you know, opioids, heroin, fentanyl, OxyContin, those are all part of the opiate family. Basically, they're all depressants. When you have something like methamphetamine, whether it's crystal meth, that's a stimulant. That's a whole different part of the drug world. One's a downer, one's an upper. And with the stimulant, what you're seeing now, especially with the drug cartels, they have pill press machines to make Xanax and Adderall pills that look identical to those that are prescribed to adults and youth alike. The difference is the Xanax is filled with fentanyl, and the Adderall, illicitly made Adderall pills, are filled with crystal meth, methamphetamine. So that stimulant jacks people up, gets their heart rate going, and the medical issues that they have from that. Meth is unlike the opioid crisis. Methamphetamines causes something called meth mouth, where people lose their teeth and their appearance goes from looking like a normal, natural, you know, human being to, in a rapid fashion within a year or two, they look like a fraction of the person they used to be. They'll miss their teeth. It's disgusting.
Yeah, they use those pictures to scare us in school, and obviously for good cause.
Well, you know, I mean, you can say they use it to scare you. I say they're using it to educate you. Because when you see somebody that has declined so rapidly due to the illicit drug use with methamphetamines, it's pretty gut-wrenching to see someone that you know or love or someone that you're familiar with go down the rabbit hole so rapidly.
Absolutely. And looking at those pictures, it was always like the scare tactics to like get us to not want to choose that path. However, now with the whole prevention aspect, that has been more useful and more productive, as studies have shown and stuff like that, and how like we have been more connected with our peers and educating them on what we see and the healthy lifestyles that we choose to live, and just that's the better route. And that's the whole point of Engage, correct, is to get that message out.
Yeah, we want that message out there. One of the biggest things is, first of all, like, to congratulate you three and your whole group here at making it happen, right?
Thank you.
Because
thank
you're you. Leaders, you're not followers.
Absolutely.
And by leading the charge, you chose to live a healthy, drug-free life. That's important. Now, I like to use the example that not many people say, hey, I'm going to stick a needle in my arm and get high. I don't know anybody, including my brother, who's been using heroin for over 2 decades. Now, the gut-wrenching part of this is the cartels are specifically targeting kids. Mm-hmm. You say that's a scare tactic, right? And when you're in school, you go, ah, man, I would never use methamphetamine. Well, what happens with little Johnny next door that says, hey, V, you got an Adderall for me? Because he knows you take Adderall. Sure, I'll give you one. What he doesn't know is that's not a legitimate Adderall. That's one filled with methamphetamine.
Right.
So then what happens?
Little Johnny's addicted.
Little Johnny's addicted to meth. And within a year's time, little Johnny doesn't look like little Johnny anymore. He looks like that scary person you saw in the poster that they were trying to scare you about.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And that's the problem. It's such a rapid digression in humanity, if you will.
So with this sort of like prevalence of these like prescription drugs that are being given, or these drugs that aren't prescription that are made by these cartels.
So Drug Take Back Day, the DEA started this 20 years ago. Basically, it used to be an annual thing. Then we made it a biannual thing because it was so successful. I believe last year alone, there was 15,000 pounds collected in New Hampshire alone.
900 tons nationally. Oh, no, sorry, 500 tons nationally.
So think about it. A little old New Hampshire that has 1.1 million people. We do the drug take back twice a year for 4 hours, and no questions asked. You bring anything you want that's prescription, whether you obtain them legally or illegally. We don't care. We don't ask questions. Throw them in the box, get rid of them, and we bring them, and they get incinerated mm-hmm. within a rapid fashion of the date of collection. Now, that's important because, again, that's the prevention part of what happens if you had a surgery and they give you Percocet or oxycodone, whatever it may be, and you leave them in your medicine cabinet.
Right.
And then your buddy comes over and looks in the medicine cabinet and says, hey, what's this? That kid didn't wake up that day saying, I'm going to take a pill. Well, suddenly they, whoa, I like this feeling.
Mm-hmm.
I like this feeling a lot. And then suddenly that leads down that path of addiction.
Absolutely. And I think that's one of the concerns that has been around for so long with student athletes.
Yep.
And all athletes in general, and how they can all have a different like type of brain chemistry that'll say like, oh, I really like this and I want to keep taking this, and others won't get addicted to it. Why is it that there are some people who will get addicted immediately or very quickly to drugs like that versus the people who are able to just be like, you know what, I feel fine, I can take an Advil and I can move on?
I think that's a great question. For me, I like to, when I do talks to kids especially, I use the analogy of a light switch, right? Everybody has a light switch. You turn it on and off. Now, I know that when I had 2 hip surgeries, when I took something because the pain was so unbearable, I could take something. The light switch goes off. Once the injury's done, I'm done.
Right.
My brother, on the other hand, he took that pill for the first time due to an injury from sports. That light switch went on. He could never shut it off again.
Gotcha.
So depending on your brain chemistry, it's everybody's wired differently.
Right, absolutely. And I think that that is one of those messages that does need to get out there more often, is just that anyone can be addicted.
Absolutely, anyone can. And what I like to say is, you don't know if you have an on or off switch on that light switch right. in your brain. Mm-hmm.
So don't test the limits.
Exactly. So why take it that first time?
Absolutely.
You don't know if you can shut that back off.
Right.
And that's such like a interesting, like why even try it, like you said.
And that's the whole point of like when you try to, I hate to say it, but like when you're talking to 8th grade kids,
yeah,
they get ready for high school, their brains, you know, the male brain doesn't fully mature until 24, maybe 25, mm-hmm. female brain 26. Mm-hmm. I mean, 26 for men, 24 for women. Mm-hmm. So as an 8th grader, you're trying to tell these kids not to test the limits.
Right.
They still don't even know what a light switch is.
right,
and you're trying to bring it down to a level where it's comprehensible for them, and Absolutely. It's tough.
And I think that that is why prevention is so important, because we are talking to those younger kids, and it may not be about the opioid epidemic specifically, right. but we can dumb it down to things like nicotine addictions, because that is something that is common in those younger grades, or even things that are like just healthy lifestyle choices in general.
Food.
Yeah. Exactly. I was going to say that. Yep.
I mean, think about it, right? You look at what kids are eating these days.
Junk food is addictive.
It's huge. We didn't go to a fast food restaurant when I was growing up. Friday night was pizza night.
Right.
Every other meal was cooked at home.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
I have four kids. They play a variety of sports. I was down in Stoughton, Mass. Yesterday for two basketball games.
Mm-hmm.
It's easy to go through a drive-thru.
Absolutely.
Oh, it so is.
Especially with, like, with COVID, right? All the dining rooms being closed.
Exactly.
I know even, like, my friends will just, like, hang out during the night and go get food somewhere.
Yep.
So, like, I'm by no means saying I'm perfect at this either. But now, even with, like, dining rooms open and stuff, we still choose to go through the, like, the drive-through and just sit and eat in the car and stuff like that.
Well, and you look at something like food, that can be addicting as well.
Of course.
But you want to educate kids in that prevention aspect about making healthy choices.
Absolutely.
And a healthy choice, of course, starts at a low level like food.
Yep.
Soda. But really, you know, if the kids are making good choices eating, chances are they're going to make good choices and not decide to do an illegal or an illicit drug.
Mm-hmm.
Ideally.
Right.
I was like telling this story early on when we were just talking, but we don't know like the long-term effect of like a lot of these things like nicotine. Absolutely. And stuff like that. And even like in the short term, it can do so much to you. I was talking about like my rec basketball league where it's equal playing time.
Yep.
40 minute games, running clock. So you're really only running around for 10, 15 minutes a game. They were like that. There was someone that I knew who would have to like go to the bathroom, take off his mask, even like sometimes like throw up, and come back out and play just because he'd done so much to his lungs already, like in such a short amount of time that he couldn't even run around for 15 minutes. And like you were talking,
think about it. That's a 17-year-old probably.
Is yeah,
17. Our still age, a teenager.
When you're like almost at your prime.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, you take someone at that level and that age and that level of, I guess, despair, if you will, mm-hmm. right? They're that out of shape
right.
because of the choices they're making. Look at that person in 5 years and right. 10 years and 15 years. You have to look at the longitudinal effects of this and see how far down range this is going to constantly have an adverse effect on what they do in life.
Absolutely. And one of the things that you had mentioned earlier before we started the podcast was how the nicotine pods are usually like a pack a day. And it was originally created to help smokers
right.
quit so that way they could, you know, use less and less and less and not have the smoke effects for the lungs. And yet it turned around and did the exact opposite.
Highly addictive.
Highly addictive. And it turned teenagers into addicts who may never have picked up a cigarette.
Well, again, you look at the marketing aspects, right? Flavors like bubblegum and grape and cherry, and it always amazes me when you see some big jack guy that's, you know, in his 20s vaping a cherry, whatever it may be.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But
that poor decision leads to a long-term health effect, right?
Absolutely.
And most kids that try it for the first time, mm-hmm. they're like, oh, I'll try it. Maybe peer pressure, right? They're more of a follower than a leader. Suddenly they get hooked on that.
Right.
And now their lungs are damaged, and then they can't play basketball or lacrosse mm-hmm. or wrestle.
Yep.
And then their life starts to have a downward spiral.
Absolutely.
Now, take it a step further. When you look at these illicitly made pills, these kids don't necessarily, they may think they're taking a legitimate Adderall, mm-hmm. again, not prescribed to them, or a legitimate Xanax, because, you know, you say, hey, listen, this is going to help you perform better. You're mm-hmm. going to play better football. You're going to be smarter, faster. Well, right. you take that and suddenly you're addicted.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
And if that light switch can't shut off again, it's a whole different ball game with meth. We don't have rehab set up for methamphetamine addiction. The amount of violence incurred from meth addicts, whether it's the ER staff, any first responder, you have to change the style in which you go to calls for overdoses. Because when people, the overdoses you go to when someone's coming out of an opiate or an opioid, when they come through, they're not necessarily violent.
Mm-hmm.
They may get Narcan and wake up a little on edge, and they could be violent, but it's not bad. Someone that's on meth, you could take a 100-pound female or male, and they could have the strength of five people.
Mm-hmm.
And now suddenly you're battling with those people.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And then it incurs injuries on the officers and the first responders. It's dangerous.
Absolutely. And I think that this day and age, with social media, it is not helpful in regards to this whole epidemic, because there are those college students who are like, oh, I just want to take an Adderall to be able to finish this paper. So they go, they take it. It ends up being meth. And then they know who their dealer is. And then they can use social media to be like, oh, take this. Or this is the person who sells it. And then that person gains a clientele. And that's not good either.
No, and that's a valid point. Like I said prior to recording, I picked my daughter up from the airport prior to Easter. And the first thing I talked to her about was the Adderall, the illicitly made Adderall and Xanax pills.
Right.
And, you know, I'll keep the college out of it, but the one she talked about, there's a lot of kids that take them. Mm-hmm. And it's an out-of-state school, and she said a lot of kids take them. But, again, when you have trained professionals that cannot tell the difference between an illicitly made and legally made prescription pill, or I shouldn't, you know, the one that looks like it, what makes you think a college kid or a high school kid or even an adult's going to be able to figure it out?
They won't.
They can't.
So how do you be a leader when the odds are stacked against you?
The odds are never stacked against you when you're a leader, right? No matter how bad you think things are, a true leader gets through adversity regardless of the situation he or she are in.
So what are steps that followers can take to become one?
Lead by example. Do what you feel is right. You know, growing up with a father that was a policeman for 34 years, basically, if you think something doesn't seem right, if you get that gut instinct that something doesn't seem right, it's not. Yeah. So instead of just saying, you know, maybe I'm overthinking this, I'll do what everyone else is doing, listen to your gut instinct. Mm-hmm. And in that split second, you got to make a decision. Do I want to be a leader or do I want to be a follower?
Right.
And that's the decision where that follower that normally follows can become a leader. Turn like that and then say, nah, I'm good, thanks. Mm-hmm. Walk away.
Yep. You know what I find interesting is that I have certain friends who, it's like those people that you grow up with, and so they make their own decisions, but you're like, oh, I love you like family anyways.
Yep.
And I noticed that, like, I've always been one of those people who was like, you know what, I really don't want to lose that friendship, so I'm going to let you do you, essentially. And I still would carry myself in my own way, which would be leading by example. And if they choose to follow, they choose to follow. And if not, then they don't. But what I've noticed is that since I joined the Army, it feels like everything just escalated so much more. And I think that that made me realize how bad things can actually get.
Yep.
And I don't even associate with certain people anymore, even though it's like their family, it feels like, you know, but it's like, I guess I know that like Friday nights, Saturday nights are not the nights to hang out with them. Like I'll see you in the middle of the day because I know what they choose to do. And I think that that's something that people should realize is that it shouldn't take you making a decision that it's like, it could really end your career to be like, oh, maybe I shouldn't hang out with them at these certain times, you know, to like show them what is really right or really wrong. People should just start doing it because that way they don't have that chance at all to get involved in anything like that because they're not associating with them.
Oh, what do they say? Birds of a feather, right?
Flock together.
You are who you're associated with.
Yep.
My father used to tell me all the time, you can be the best kid in the world and hang out with punks. Guess what people think you are?
A punk.
Right. A punk. Now, you can be the biggest punk in the world, hang around with great kids. People are going to think you're a great kid.
Right.
So you have to make that choice. Mm-hmm. And that's something that, as a parent of four kids, you have 18 years to have your kids grow up to be adults and make good decisions.
Right.
So that first 18 years is key. And this is why Engage is not unlike 360, where it was only youth focused. Right. We're focusing on everybody, adults and youth, because it truly takes a village to get through what we've been dealing with the opioid and soon to be methamphetamine crisis.
Absolutely. And
when you take it a step further, the mental health crisis that's going to hit us because of COVID.
Right. Definitely. And I think that, that is one of those things that is so important. It's just like, I've always been one of those people who's like a decent kid in school and I do these extracurriculars. That is great. And I'm never the person to like jump in and join into the festivities or anything like that. But I think truly disengaging from those types of people, it actually helps them realize their own situation. And I've noticed with a few people that, like, I used to be really close with, they're starting to make some better changes without me, kind of like me and some other people, not right. to, you know.
You're but, a positive influence.
Right. And I think that that actually ended up helping, that I kind of stepped back, because they realized, like, oh, certain people are starting to notice things, and maybe I do need to make some changes to be able to keep those people that are actually important to them, you know?
No, absolutely. And I think that's great, because when you are a leader, mm-hmm. you can't, you know, the old adage is you can lead a horse to water, you can't make them drink.
Right.
So when you have friends that may be making the poor choices, mm-hmm. you can only lead by example and continuously do the right thing
yep.
and make the good choices. And two things are going to happen. They're either eventually going to come to your side of the stable
yep.
and realize, you know what, she's making the better choices, man. I want to go to college, or I want to go in the military, or I want to be a police officer. Yep. I can tell you from 25 years as a police officer, having sat on oral boards for hiring, and, you know, you go and help out at the physical fitness part of the test. The amazing thing is you have people that you ask, hey, how long have you wanted to be a police officer? Oh, my whole life. Mm-hmm. Well, wait a second. So you've done X, Y, and Z for drugs. Did you not think there was going to be an adverse, like, consequence to your actions?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, I was a kid. Well, you're 22 and, you know, you just smoked marijuana 6 months ago. Like, that's, you know what I mean?
Yeah, definitely.
So there's consequences to your actions.
Mm-hmm.
So hopefully those kids that are making poor choices see you and all of you here mm-hmm. making the better choices. And they say, you know what? I want to be like these guys.
Absolutely.
I don't want to do bad things anymore.
Yep, absolutely.
So you talked about how Operation Engage focuses both on the youth and on the parents, on education. What are you guys doing to, like, educate both youth and parents about these things?
So what we're trying to do is get some time in workplace, you know, any work environment, for instance, like going to a hospital. You take some triage nurses, for instance, that, you know, they're dealing with kids for mental health crises, and a lot of people that have mental health illnesses or a crisis at this point in time, what are they doing mostly? They self-medicate. So we want to go into, like, doctor's offices and hospitals and, you know, whether it's a business in the mill yard, and let people know what is happening in the current trends of the drug world here locally in New Hampshire and nationally and globally, and really focus on what's happening here. And let people know that, you know, these illicitly made pills, it's a real thing. I mean, they're being seized by large numbers here in New Hampshire.
Mm-hmm.
So this isn't something that's hypothetical and if and when. No, it's here. So that we're doing that. As for the youth leadership, we're going to run a CADCA youth leadership forum, I think probably in early fall, much like the one we did in 2017. We're going to have, you know, a lot of collaboration with community partners such as Making It Happen and the Raymond Youth Coalition and, you know, Crispin's House. I attend a lot of meetings. I attend the Governor's Youth Council Advisory Board meeting. That's how we're getting our name out there. And every time I get to speak to a different venue, we can continuously push our agenda to educate through prevention.
Absolutely. And I think that's one of the main parts of being involved with the teenagers, because prevention starts as young as possible.
Absolutely.
And I feel like for us to be able to convince our friends and talk to our friends and say, hey, like, try this, do this, it trickles through people. And I know for, like, a short period of time, I felt like people weren't knowing exactly who Making It Happen was because it was so brand new. But now people are like, oh, like, what's the right. next Making It Happen event? And so
it's been around for a long time,
it's
though.
It's been around for yeah. well, absolutely.
I'm old.
Absolutely. But the youth aspect of it is fairly new.
Absolutely.
So I think it took, like, a year or so. And then people were like, oh, like, when's the next event? Like, what's going on? And so that's great that word of mouth truly works. And I think that we definitely have to start doing that with Operation Engage.
No, absolutely. And I'd appreciate you handing out my business card to anyone that you deem. No, really. And let people know. I'll talk to anybody at any time.
Awesome.
I think it's important for people to hear it from the horse's mouth. Someone yeah. that's been in the community for the last 2.5 decades. Somebody that lives with someone that's addicted. You know, there's a lot of positives that come out of experience.
Absolutely.
Both good and bad experiences.
Yep.
So when you can talk about things and not just be someone that just landed a job, mm-hmm. you know, I wasn't necessarily ready to retire, but this was such a perfect fit
yep.
for my background and something that I'm passionate about. I said, you know what? It's time to go.
Right. Absolutely.
Here I am.
Yep. And we are very happy to have you.
I appreciate it.
Absolutely.
Well, we really do appreciate your time with us. I want to ask you one final question, and that's, if there is something you can leave our audience with, what would it be?
Be a leader and always make good choices.
We like that, yeah. Nice.
Awesome. Thank you so much for your time.
I appreciate Thank you. You guys. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to today's podcast. We hope you enjoyed and will tune in next week. Coming from Making It Happen in Manchester. Have a great day, everyone.